Welcome back, everyone, to The Deep Dive. Ready for another deep dive? This one really gets you thinking. Can a spoken promise hold the same weight as a written contract? We're looking into the world of charitable donations and legal promises, and you might be surprised by what we find.
It is fascinating, isn't it? This case is right at the intersection of good intentions, charitable giving, and you know the realities of contract law could really impact anyone who wants to support causes they believe in.
Exactly. So we're looking at a case in Massachusetts, Congregation Kedima Torah Moshe, an Orthodox Jewish synagogue, and a promised $25,000 donation from someone in their community. They wanted to use this very generous donation to build a new library in his honor.
Seems simple enough on the surface, right?
You would think so, but this is where it gets complicated. The promise was never actually put in writing, and sadly the man passed away before he could donate. So now the synagogue is in a tough spot trying to get the funds from his estate. Okay, so let's break this down a little bit. The synagogue actually ended up taking the estate to court. They were hoping to get that promised donation. What were some of their legal arguments? What was the basis for saying they deserve this money?
Well, they presented two main arguments. First, they argued there was an implied contract. Essentially, they said the synagogue naming the library after the man was kind of like an exchange for the donation. You know, in legal terms, this is the concept of consideration, basically the idea that in a contract, each party has to give something of value.
Yeah, that makes sense at first glance. But I'm guessing the courts needed a bit more than just a general sense of, you know, an agreement.
Exactly. The court really looked at the specifics. Was there a clearly defined agreement? Was there a specific exchange of value on both sides? And in this case, not really. Seemed like more of a nice gesture, not a legally binding contract.
Okay, so what about their second argument? They also brought up reliance, right? Did they say they had already budgeted for the library based on this promise? So they relied on the man's word.
Yes, they did. They claimed they took action based on the promise by including it in their budget. So they said it would be unfair for the estate to just back out now. But the courts, once again, weren't convinced. They didn't think the synagogue's actions were enough to prove reliance in a legal sense.
So just budgeting for the library wasn't enough to really demonstrate reliance. I'm starting to see how tricky these legal definitions can be. What would have been enough in this case to really prove reliance?
Well, the courts were looking for proof that the synagogue took actions that they wouldn't have otherwise taken, and it had to be solely because of the promise. Like, if they had started construction, maybe signed contracts with builders, or incurred other expenses specifically counting on that $25,000, things might have been different.
It seems like timing is really key here.
Yeah.
Had they already, you know, broken ground on the library, this might have gone in their favor.
Yeah, quite possibly. The court needed to see concrete actions that showed the synagogue had changed their position, committed resources, all because of that promise. Planning and budgeting alone just wasn't enough.
This case is so interesting because it really shows how a seemingly simple promise could become this huge legal battle. And the synagogue didn't stop there, right? They actually went a step further and asked the court to reconsider the rules completely.
You're absolutely right. They brought up something called the restatement, second of contracts. It's a legal text that basically suggests courts can be more flexible with these types of promises, especially when it comes to charities. They essentially said, hey, let's make all charitable promises automatically binding, even without all the legal stuff. Pretty bold move, if you ask me.
Wow, that's a big ask. So did they actually convince the court to change the rules?
Not this time. Yeah. While the court did acknowledge the restatement, they decided it didn't apply in this particular case. They felt that enforcing a spoken promise, especially against an estate and without clear legal grounds, it could set a dangerous precedent.
I see their point. You know, we need to balance upholding people's wishes, but also protecting estates from potentially, I don't know, ambiguous claims. Seems like the court chose to err on the side of caution here.
Definitely. They really emphasized how important clarity and formality are, especially when we're dealing with big sums of money. Seems like they were worried about potential problems down the line if spoken promises were easily enforceable against estates. It really makes you think you know about the importance of really understanding the legal side of things, even when we're talking about something like charitable giving, which, you know, you'd think would be pretty straightforward.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
This case really shows that. Like, there's a misconception out there. We often hear that charitable pledges are like legally binding. But this situation proves that it's not always that black and white.
Right. You hit the nail on the head. There's this kind of assumption that any promise, especially when it's tied to doing good, supporting worthy causes, it automatically has legal weight. But the reality is the courts need more than just a verbal agreement. even when it comes to charitable giving.
It's almost like there's this tension, right, between wanting to encourage generosity and upholding individual rights. We want to make it easy for people to give to charities they care about, but there also needs to be some kind of legal structure to make sure things are fair and prevent people from being held to promises they didn't necessarily mean to be legally binding.
Exactly. And that's where those legal concepts we talked about, consideration and reliance, they become super important. They provide this framework for deciding when a promise actually becomes a legal contract.
So let's dive a little deeper into those concepts for our listeners. Can you explain consideration in the context of contract law? What does that really mean?
Sure. Consideration basically means there has to be an exchange of something valuable between the parties involved in a contract. It can't be one-sided. It's this mutual exchange that makes the agreement legally binding. In this case, the synagogue claimed that naming the library after the man was their side of the bargain, but the courts didn't think that was a clear enough exchange to actually enforce the promise.
So it's not enough for one person to just say they'll do something. There has to be this clear understanding that both sides are getting something specific out of the deal.
Exactly. The courts really look at the details to make sure that the consideration is real and not just some vague gesture.
And what about reliance? What's its role in deciding whether a promise is legally enforceable?
Reliance is all about what the person or organization trying to enforce the promise actually did. They have to prove that they took some kind of action based on the promise, and that they were harmed in some way because of it, meaning they wouldn't have acted that way if they hadn't relied on the promise.
So here, the synagogue claimed they relied on the promise because they already budgeted for the library renovation, but the court didn't think that was enough.
Right. Budgeting is seen as more of a preparatory step, something internal. The courts didn't see any evidence that the synagogue had made any irreversible commitments based on the promise. Like we discussed earlier, if they had started construction or signed contracts based on the man's promise, the outcome could have been very different.
Oh, so the timing really matters. The court's looking for solid proof that the person relying on the promise actually changed their position, did something concrete, based on the expectation that the promise would be kept.
You got it. They're looking for actions, not just intentions or plans. That's a key distinction in contract law.
This case also brought up the restatement, second, of contracts, which seems to have a slightly different take on these charitable pledges. Could you explain how the restatement differs from traditional contract law?
So the restatement, it's this really respected legal text that aims to clarify and kind of summarize common law principles. It's not exactly binding law itself, but courts do often use it for guidance. When it comes to charitable promises, the restatement recognizes that they're often made with this sense of moral obligation. Not always with all the strict legal formalities of a business contract. It suggests that a charitable promise could be binding even without the typical consideration or reliance, especially if the person making the promise should have reasonably expected it to lead to action by the charity.
So the restatement is trying to find a balance between the formal requirements of contract law and the unique nature of charitable giving, where promises often come from a sense of moral duty.
Exactly. It acknowledges that charities often depend on these pledges to actually carry out their mission, and that donors shouldn't be able to back out of those promises easily without any consequences.
Makes sense. But in this case, the court wasn't persuaded by the restatement. Why do you think that was?
Well, I think it was a few things. First, the promise was spoken, not written. The restatement does allow for some flexibility, but courts tend to give more weight to written agreements, especially when dealing with estates.
Right, makes sense. A written agreement leaves less room for, you know, interpretation or disputes later on. What else do you think played a role?
Another big thing was that the synagogue was trying to get the money from the man's estate after he had passed away. Courts are generally more careful about enforcing promises against estates because the person who made the promise isn't there to clarify what they meant.
It seems like the court wanted to avoid setting a precedent. That could lead to all sorts of claims against estates based on informal promises. They were trying to protect the legal process and the deceased person's estate.
That's a great point. It's all about finding that balance between honoring someone's intentions and making sure the legal system is fair.
This has been such an eye-opening conversation. I feel like I'm really starting to get the nuances of contract law and how it all applies to charitable giving. But before we wrap up, I'm curious to hear your expert opinion. If you were the judge in this case, knowing all you know about contract law, what would you have decided?
Wow, that's a tough one. You can definitely see both sides. The synagogue was acting in good faith, relying on a promise they thought was sincere. It's understandable why they'd feel they deserved the donation.
I agree. It's easy to see where they're coming from. What about the estate side?
On the other hand, The estate was just trying to carry out the man's wishes, make sure his assets were distributed according to his plan. It's a complex situation with valid points on both sides.
Sounds like a classic legal dilemma. So how would you weigh all those factors?
For me, the fact that the promise was only spoken, that would be a major factor. I get the spirit of the restatement and its goal of creating more flexibility for charitable pledges, but I still think written agreements are crucial, especially when you're talking about large amounts of money.
So in this specific case, you lean towards sticking with the existing rules of contract law, even though it might disappoint the synagogue.
Yeah, I think without a written agreement or clear evidence of consideration or, you know, detrimental reliance, it'd be really hard to justify enforcing the promise against the estate. Yeah. It might lead to some disappointment in certain cases. But upholding the formal requirements of contract law ultimately benefits everyone because it provides a stable and predictable legal system.
It's a good reminder that even with the best intentions, the law needs some level of formality to ensure fairness and prevent future disputes.
Exactly. And this case really highlights how important it is to get legal advice when dealing with big financial matters, whether it's making a large donation or planning your estate.
That's great advice. It seems like a simple chat with a lawyer could avoid a lot of headaches and potential legal battles in the future. It's really amazing, isn't it? How a simple act of generosity can lead to such a complicated legal discussion. This whole case really makes you think about, you know, those good intentions, but also the need for clear legal boundaries.
It does. This case shows us that the law and what we think is fair or morally right, they don't always line up perfectly. Sometimes, even when you have the best intentions, you need the right legal stuff to back it up, especially if you end up in court.
Yeah, I agree. This deep dive has really changed how I think about charitable giving. It's not just about feeling good because you're supporting a good cause. It's also about, like you said, understanding the legal side and making sure everything is done the right way.
Absolutely. Clarity and transparency are so important, especially when you're dealing with big financial commitments.
As we wrap up here, I can't help but wonder, you know, what if the man had just put his promise in writing? Would that have changed things? Do you think a signed pledge agreement would help the synagogue's case?
Yeah, most likely. A written document. It would have clearly stated the donation amount, how the money would be used, and any conditions. That would have given the synagogue much stronger legal ground. It would have been hard for the estate to challenge the promise then.
It's a good lesson for anyone who wants to make a big donation. Putting it in writing just makes everything clear, protects everyone involved, and could prevent a lot of headaches and legal battles down the road.
Couldn't agree more. And you know, if there's ever any doubt about the legal side of a donation or any other financial thing, it's always smart to talk to a lawyer just to make sure everything's done right.
That's good advice. So, as we finish our deep dive into this really interesting case, what's the one thing you want our listeners to remember?
I think the biggest takeaway is clarity is key. Whether you're making a promise, accepting a donation, or making any kind of agreement, make sure everyone understands what's going on. Make sure everything's clear, ideally in writing. It might not be the most exciting part of giving to charity, but it can save you a ton of trouble later.
Great advice to end on. We'll leave our listeners with that. Good intentions are important, but it's best to express them through clear agreements that are, you know, legally sound. Until next time, keep exploring, keep learning, and keep supporting those causes you care about. Just make sure you're doing it the right way so everyone's protected. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.